Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
All right, folks, welcome to another adventure of the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show. I am pumped up today to have my brother from another mother here. Ben Stein is in the house. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing excellent, Waska. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. As my father would say, may he rest in peace. Thanks for being had. Yes. So this is awesome because we're going to actually get to catch up a bit also, because we started talking before I hit the record button, and you were just going to dive into the dark night of the soul period of the 20s when you're in your 20s. And I stopped you and said, I want to get that on camera because this is going to be really good for the listeners, I'm sure, to benefit whatever your experience was. So take it away, bro.
All right. So I'll zoom right into a couple different memories that stand out in terms of my life hitting points that just were dark and had a lot of suffering. One, I remember in my mid-20s, I was in New York City and I was working to win back my girlfriend from college. And things were going well. She was my first love. She was in medical school, and I was kind of working to woo her back. We'd broken up after college, but I had her over at my place, and I was smoking a lot of weed at the time. And that was one of the things that got in the way of our relationship prior. And I had used it so habitually to go to sleep, I couldn't not do it. And it caused tension. And she's like, oh, you don't have your stuff together. And I remember just like, I actually, and I don't share this story very often, but I actually burst into tears because I was kind of so ashamed of not being in control of myself and kind of being dependent on substances. So alcohol and weed were big for me then. And, you know, you often hit those low points. And I kind of recognized that I needed to get some help at that point. And I've been kind of numbing myself out since probably 14 or 15 years old. You know, those were my coping mechanisms. But it wasn't until a couple years later that I was at work and I almost broke down crying, where I just felt this overwhelmingly empty and hollow feeling that something was wrong and I needed to get help. And I just kind of hit a certain existential black hole of my heart where I was like, something is very wrong. I was like, okay, let me seek out help. And the reason why I share these stories is, you know, when you talk about men in particular, I really wanted to figure it out on my own. And I was like, you know, everyone else is able to handle their own stuff. You know, I should be able to figure this out.
You thought everyone else was able to handle it. Most people don't. That's perception. But yes, continue.
100%. 100%. I agree with you. And I was embarrassed and too proud to reach out for help. And I didn't want to face what getting help meant for a while until it got too painful. And so the reason why I share this is, like, if you have an inkling that you need to get help with something, like, get some help. You don't have to suffer for as long as I did, because I really put myself through the ringer. And that meant me estranging myself from friendships, from family, and just overall, I think I didn't take advantage of my life in the way I could have. But so I got to the point where I sought help. And I share this with my clients and prospective clients a lot. I started with psychiatry because my dad is a psychiatrist. He still practices. He's over 80. God bless him. And I thought that's where you start if you got stuff on your mind. In New York City with a particular psychiatrist I sought out, I was ready to bare my soul. Keep in mind, I wanted to do this for years, but hadn't talked about stuff that happened to me in childhood. And within about 10 minutes, he's like, oh, what do you want? And meaning like, what prescription do I want? And it was kind of like this like gut punch of like, oh, that's what you do. You prescribe medicine. So being that I wasn't afraid of experimenting, I tried antidepressants, but that just made me more numb. And it wasn't what I needed, and they work for some people who need them, but that wasn't what I needed. So I talked to them a little bit more and found the therapist, and the therapist was good for a few months. I got some things off my chest. It was cathartic. But then I found myself after probably about 3 months being like, what's wrong with me this week? And that seemed counterintuitive to me. And ultimately, soon after that, an ex-girlfriend gifted me a free coaching session. And that session led to a weekend intensive. And then that led to 6 months intensive, and then eventually a two-year training program. But with that initial six-month program and that initial weekend, they're like, Ben, you're ready to fly, but you got a ball and chain, and that's substances. And you got to stop them for a while to kind of get your head straight. And I knew I needed that, and I had like avoided AA. It just didn't jive with me, or maybe I just didn't want to go down that avenue of help.
Now, how old were you at this point?
So this was, I was, you know, like 28, 29.
Okay.
And I was challenged to 3 months, you know, without, and this is like me being a bachelor in New York City. I was like, how can I do that? It's like what life revolves around there, or at least for me. But I did it, and it was extremely eye-opening. It was confidence building. And that challenge helped me build my confidence. The tools of coaching in terms of having vision, understanding the conversation in my head, just really transformed my life and was the springboard for much more coaching in the future, and me designing my life with intention rather than living in the past and living according to others' expectations of me. So I know that's a short, long answer to the question, but that frames up my 20s and my early transformation well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. That's a fairly common type of story, especially growing up in New York, as I did also. So kudos for finding your way and turning it around. I have a couple of questions. I'll just share a little bit, you know, growing up in a similar fashion, which again, I think working with primarily guys, a lot of guys have gone through that. And my questions are going to, I think, stem from maybe what we all share, or anyway. So I grew up in an alcoholic family, you know, so my role was just to be the quiet, good little boy and not make waves. And, you know, when I found my escape, it was, you know, smoking weed. My sister smoked weed. We had a full blown bar in the basement because my dad obviously was the alcoholic. So our vacations, like we go to Puerto Rico, and really what I remember most is like all the cases of alcohol, the duty free alcohol my dad was bringing back, you know. But there's a lot of stories that go along with that. For me, which is another topic we're going to get into, is fatherhood. That's really what turned it around for me, because I was partying like a maniac. And I'm a big Who fan. I bought like every night to Quadrophenia at the Madison Square Garden. So it was the last night. Actually, second to last night. And, you know, if you know Quadrophenia, you know, Dr. Jimmy and Mr. Jim drinks his gin. So I drank gin, which I don't drink gin. I don't even remember the night. So the next morning I was watching my, I only had one son at the time, Jonah, who was, I think, maybe a year and a half. And I was so hungover. And I started crying, man. I could get welled up now. I'm like, what am I doing? My God, I have this beautiful being, this gift right here in front of me, and I'm hungover, and I made a deal with him right then. I'm like, just make it an easy day, buddy. You know, I'll put you in the backpack. We'll walk around the neighborhood, and I promise, you know. And honestly, dude, I remember that day vividly. That was it for me. I'm like, clean up your act, dude. Clean it up. You know, you set intention to be a father, and you know, it was all like uphill from there for me as well. I mean, so that was my impetus to get my act together. So I want to ask you about that. So in your 20s, it's not unnatural for us to be abusing or using substances. So many people do it. So I'm not that I'm condoning that.
Right.
But what, especially growing up, I said I grew up in the alcoholic family. You grew up in a family where your dad was a psychologist. So if you're cool with sharing, like, what do you think it was that got you into that dark space, you know, related to your family and even related to your relationship with your dad, if you're open to sharing with that?
Yeah. So I was the youngest of three, so two older sisters, and my mom suffered with depression. Mm-hmm. So psychiatrist, workaholic dad, and a mom that wasn't really able to be as present as, you know, I would have liked. So there was, you know, my dad actually described their parenting styles. There's a psychiatric term, benign neglect.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's a full house right there.
I mean, with that said, there was love. You know, my parents, you know, provided me like a nice private school education, and all of that. But, you know, there was, you know, I probably could have used some more love and attention. It was kind of like the show was on my mom and her suffering when my dad was around. And when he wasn't, you know, it was just like, you know, like you were saying, I used my sense of humor and just going with the flow to just kind of go with whatever was going on. So it wasn't about me, my needs, my wants, et cetera.
Right.
So that's kind of where some of that pain came up. And my mom was also heavily medicated for a number of years too. So she actually, you know, had been through AA and was an alcoholic. I didn't know her as such because she had been clean, but she was unfortunately kind of checked out with some of the medication she was on. So that was also really tough for me to kind of have a mom there, but not really all there as well. That was like really frustrating. And I remember just being really angry about that, especially in my teenage years.
Mm.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey guys, this is Waska. Listen, if you're hearing my voice, there are no coincidences. Are you ready to get unblocked and take the next step forward, whether it's with relationship issues, finances, or just moving into the next phase to elevate yourself? Listen, bros, this is what I do. I'm here for you. Drop me an email at Waska, that's W-A-S-K-A, at illuminatedwarrior.com. We will work on this together and take you to the next step. I promise you'll be glad you did. And it's interesting, like, we're young dudes, we don't look at our parents that in that way. I don't know if you feel the same way, but, you know, our parents were definitely maybe not all knowing, but they, you relied on them. They were, you know, even at 30 or 40, I look back when they were 30 or 40, I'm like, wow, they're adults. And then when I became that age, I'm like, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. They were just trying to figure it out, just like I was at that age. And, you know, you get a different perspective, I think, as we get older, hopefully get wiser and all. And then, you know, we could shift into becoming a parent, as I brought up before. So let's talk about Nella and Neela, because I've seen what I have seen of you as being a really engaged, loving dad. How has that affected the way you were in the world prior to being a dad? Because you're very much involved from what I've seen.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. Let me take a step back, because something you said earlier was pretty important in terms of the kids being a good impetus for cleaning up your act. So to pick up my story before, that 3 months I took off turned into a year. And then throughout my 30s, I experimented with different ways of having a relationship with alcoholism. So I wasn't totally abstinent. And it probably was when Noah was a baby where I kind of had a similar realization where I was like, okay, I'm kind of checked out here. And this is what I hated growing up, and kind of had a similar realization that this isn't what I want. So kind of I think there's different ways of experimenting with I would do like limiting to X amount of drinks a week and only weed on the weekends, for example. And that was okay. It was an improvement. But what I've realized over the past few years, and once I hit January, that will be like 2 years substance free. All right. For me,
beautiful.
Thank you. What I realized is I know what that's like. I know the amount of mental energy it takes to moderate. And it's just, it is possible for me, but it just takes up too much mental bandwidth. And I'm someone who wants to be high performing, wants to be present. And that takes me out of that high performance and presence. So now for me, it's like, okay, how can I spiritually show up as my best self and open up that channel for my intuition rather than numbing it and running away from it? And that, in another perspective on that, how can I live a life that I don't want to not run away from? And so all of that helps me center into where I'm at with it today, and it will continue to evolve. But becoming a parent, A, the lack of sleep, and wanting to be my best self definitely helped spur me on to being like, okay, I actually don't need these substances to, if I want to show up as my best self. And so I think definitely we often try to correct what happened to us for better or for worse growing up. So me being totally present is a huge priority for me. So yeah, I love my kids, Noah and Mila, and love spending time with them. And just part of my work as a man now, and some of the work I've been doing over the past few years, is really figuring out how do I take down that wall I built around my heart. And the kids are such a channel for me to open that up and allow me to then expand that to other people and other situations, because it's natural and easy for me with them. And it's about how do I expand that to other people so I can be more loving and present. But that's the great gift of them, one of them at least.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That to me, presence is everything, man, because when we're present to, like, just right now, whoever we're sitting across from, and just really being there, listening, not always like thinking like, well, I got to say this, or just, you know, thinking about all these other things that are going on, but really being there, whether it's with your kids, your partner, business associates, whoever it is. I mean, it really is a gift that we could do that for each other. And so much of the time, I was just having this conversation just the other day, like, I say like, hey, how you doing, brother? How you doing, man? And it's, you know, and then there's this silence, because most people take it as a rhetorical question. They're not even thinking like, I'm going to answer that, because it's like, yeah, what's up? How you doing? But I actually really mean it. And I love when people ask me how I'm doing, or like, if I meet new people, they ask me like, hey, what are you all about? What do you like to do? Rather than like, hey, what do you do for work? You know, that just drives me kind of crazy, because it's just, that's the usual question, which I get. That's a social interaction thing, but it's really warms my heart when somebody wants to know me for me. And if what I do is part of who I am, that's great, you know, but I like to get to know people on a basis of more personal interaction and what they're all about. So when you were speaking, I wanted to ask you about your relationship, you know, and again, whatever you're comfortable talking about. If not, I'll get out the prodding stick and I'll get you to say it anyway. Now, this is great, man, because I know it's really helpful for the audience and all, because we've gone through similar things, all of us, man. We really have. So it's like when the guys sit in circle, we reflect, man. We reflect, we listen, we take it in, and you know, we just hold space for each other. So. Yeah. In your relationship, you know, you were married, you went through this dark, night of the soul, so to speak. You shared about the drug addiction. How was your partner? How was your wife through all this? What was her perspective, and where was she in supporting, or, you know, where were you guys butting heads or arguing or supporting each other? What did that look like?
So one smart thing I did was actually not get married early. So, cause I kind of knew I wasn't ready for it. So I at least had that self-awareness. So, I actually just celebrated my 5-year wedding anniversary,
Mazel tov.
With my wife. And one thing that I knew I wasn't ready for, marriage earlier was I had a pattern prior of not being able to speak my emotions to the girlfriends I was with. I kind of always had a girlfriend. And oftentimes, if I wasn't happy, I wasn't able to communicate that. And that would sometimes come out sideways as me cheating to give me an easy out of a relationship. And there was a lot of shame around that. And it happened more than once. And pretty gross behavior. But it was something where I knew, like, if I'm doing this, then I shouldn't be anywhere near a marriage yet, because I got to get my stuff figured out. I did learn some valuable lessons like that. And I know I will never cover up or lie anything like that, because the terrible feeling that that creates inside you and the distance that that creates in a relationship is excruciating. Mm-hmm. And it makes you want to numb more. And it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy there. So I met my wife in 2013. And, you know, we, you know, had a New York courtship where we did enjoy going out together and, you know, having drinks, et cetera. So what I love, one of the things I love about my wife is that she's always accepted me for where I'm at, whether it is being a hot mess or being on this growth journey and being supportive of that. So, you know, we just went away for a few days and we're kidless and in the Bahamas, like having a great time. You know, she's like, well, it'd be great if you had a drink. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not doing that right now, but you do you, I'll do me, et cetera. So, you know, she's supportive of whatever I want to do, whether it's, you know, and one of the things I'm actually considering right now is like, do I want to go off in the jungle and do a ayahuasca trip? And, you know, she's like, yeah, you know, if you want to do that, great. So that support and meeting me where I'm at is the most important thing.
Yeah, that is beautiful. And I think in a good, healthy, balanced relationship, that's essential that we hold space for each other. And like you said, she, you know, accepts you right where you are, which is, you know, I hear a lot of stories. That's not, I don't want to say often the case, but a lot of times it's not the case. And, you know, we really have to, or we get to be there for somebody else the way we want them to be there for us. You know, so I think there's a lot of reflection there. Now, you said something before, when you were younger or going through your times of using, I'll say, for lack of a better word, that you had a hard time expressing, a hard time emoting, and it would be a mechanism really to either end the relationship or you knew it wasn't going in a good direction. So in your infinite wisdom and hindsight, what would you say, what was going on? Because that's, you know, an underlying thing that could possibly and potentially keep rearing its ugly head. What was the emotion? What was the feeling? What was going on there that you didn't feel safe or comfortable or heard to express yourself? Do you know what that is at this point?
Yeah, it's a good and insightful question. I think there was there's people pleasing in there. And there has been a fear in the past of really standing in my truth. So, you know, one example of that is when I was in college, studied abroad. So me and my girlfriend in college were—
I studied a lot of broads in college, but I'm bumps.
Yeah, well, it's part of the story. But anyway, so my girlfriend and I were together from sophomore year and it's junior year and it's time to go abroad. I was planning on going to Australia. And I was like, hey, I want to stop this for a little while and have some fun. And she's like, no, but we should stay true to each other. And I'm like, I knew I didn't want that, but I didn't want to like have that fight with her. So I was like, okay, we'll just see what happens. And I kind of knew that once I got there, I was just going to, you know, just have all the fun with women I could. And I did. And then I like came back and I didn't tell her while I was there. And I came back and I was like, you know, let's say there was several women I kind of compromised and said it was two, and, you know, just that sort of negotiation. But it was me not being able to stand in my truth, and not wanting to upset the other person by just really saying what was on my mind. And I think a lot of the times I didn't necessarily have access to it. I just knew something was wrong. So then when something was wrong, I would go numb myself and then would kind of let my subconscious play out whatever it thought was the best plan of action given where I was at. But I think it was a fear of being able to really have difficult conversations with people, hold that space and really be a man about communicating rather than a boy. And I really feel that was kind of where I was at. I was kind of an extended boyhood and I didn't know how to deal with emotions in a mature way, especially negative ones.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. You know, we grow up usually model, if we have a dad, you know, modeling after our dad or uncles or other men that we see. Like when I grew up, there certainly wasn't any kind of like men's group or mentorship program. I mean, the closest to that was scouting, which I did for a while. I was very introverted when I was young. So I was in my own little world and did my own introversion thing to stay in a place where I felt comfortable, you know, but I had the worthiness issues and I got bullied and all that other stuff that comes along with being in that mindset of being a boy. Because really, until we find our voice, until we feel good about who we are and we're not so focused on like, oh, this person thinks this about me. And if you ever read that book, The Four Agreements, which I love because it's really simple. But two of those agreements are not to make assumptions and don't take it personally, which seem very simple and that we just naturally do, but we don't for most of us. And I think that's a large part about why young men, young boys go through a lot of stuff. We take it personally and we're constantly, you know, assuming that this person thinks this about me or I think this about myself. And we put so much pressure on ourselves and not having like a really healthy, good male role model. Where do we go from there? So a lot of times we do fall into the drugs and alcohol and sex and whatever it is to numb ourselves and not necessarily want to feel and do what I love that you're talking about, that you came to the reality of being present, of being mindful, of speaking your truth. And, you know, Crazy Horse, the Lakota medicine person, said, hey, the truth is bulletproof, you know, and I love that because it really is. When we BS or we lie, it's self-perpetuating. Then you got to remember the lie you told and then come up with something else to support it. And it just
exhausting.
It's exhausting and it doesn't work. You know, and when you're getting into relationships, if you're not going to be present and you're not going to be truthful, it's, you know, unless the other person has that same dysfunction, it's not going to last and it's not going to be healthy. So I love that you're talking about that. And that's a big part, I think, of the work that we each need to do is to find our true essence and our true self is to walk your talk, as they say, and speak your truth and be present and let the chips fall where they may, because they're going to fall anyway. So, you know. Why not stop? I feel like I wasted a lot of time going through those phases, although in hindsight, of course, it wasn't a waste of time. It's all stepping stones to get to where I am today. Even growing up as, you know, as the little alcoholic son, as I labeled myself then until I came to terms with my dad. And now I'm like, I'm so grateful. I can share a lot of stories that were not pretty stories growing up in that environment and even that my kids saw. But you know what? I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing now. I wouldn't feel as good about myself, really, if I did not learn and experience what I did with my dad. So I think if we choose to look at all these experiences as growth opportunities rather than poor me or this sucks, I think we could really have a good opportunity to elevate ourselves, you know? So let's shift, if you're ready, into, because I know when you talk about coaching and dream jobs, that's part of your mission and vision and all to help create dream jobs for peeps. So let's share a little bit about that, if you will.
Yeah, thanks for asking. And one saying I like that speaks to what you were just talking about is, you know, our mess can become our message. In terms of how we show up in the world once we get out of that victim mentality.
I like that.
Thank you. I didn't coin it. I forget who did, but
that's okay.
So the coaching I do, I'll kind of zoom out a bit and use a transition from my story. I think for a long time, I was programmed by what I call external validation, you know, programming from society and parents. And, you know, I had a big people pleaser. So I was kind of trying to walk this line of what am I interested in and what is going to be socially acceptable, et cetera. And so I enjoyed my early career. I was in commercial production and then in the advertising world. And that switched to, you know, the digital world and product management. And I had fun doing those things and they were challenging. And my criteria for a while was like, as long as I'm learning and I'm getting paid more and, you know, I'm kind of enjoying what I'm doing, then I'm on the right track. Ultimately, I found myself with some golden handcuffs, a great salary, but really not aligned with the work I was doing. It looked great on paper. I was had a two-block commute in New York City from the Woolworth Building to my apartment, but just wasn't aligned with the work. And I had a calling kind of in 2016 about like, what is my purpose? And I think a lot of the times we can coast through our careers and just being like, okay, I'm paying the bills, I'm playing it safe. And that was me. I was playing it safe because I wanted the benefits and I wanted to earn more money because that made me feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I realized like, I kept asking myself the question, like, what is my purpose? Like, I know I've got these gifts and talents and I'm not the best person for this job, even though I'm, you know, good at faking it. And so in 2016, I started the Purpose Up podcast to really explore this question around purpose. And that was the impetus for us. And during that time, I picked up some of the coach training that I had gotten in my late 20s. So that 6 months with a boutique coaching company became a 2-year coach training program. And I'll actually take a little segue into a story. After that training, I was like, if I'm going to become a coach, I got to live out a dream. And so this is another kind of big lesson is like, if you fear something, do it. And if you want to do something, go for it. So at the end of that training, I was like, let me take my trip around the world that I've wanted to do. So I put on a backpack and traveled the world for 8 months. And I started with Kilimanjaro and I ended with Everest, the base camp, and just saw the world in a big way that I'd wanted to for a while. And it was like this epic solo trip.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I highly recommend it if you can save up some money. And that was one of those things. I was afraid of it. I was like, this is going to kill my career. And I was really worried about it. But it ended up being like when I got back and I got back in the workforce, like everyone was like so fascinated by what I had just done. And they wanted to talk about it. And I was so lit up. They're like, we want a guy like this on our team. So that was a powerful lesson. But I got back into the advertising world in 2016. I was like, I'm just coasting. And so I started the Purpose Up podcast, started talking to people living purpose-led lives, and I wanted to inspire others to do the same. And then I started coaching as a side hustle because I felt called to do that. And then in 2018, I was gifted with a restructure, right? You talked about those things that happened for us that didn't feel like that at the time, getting let go, but my whole department got let go. And that was the time where I was like, okay, if I don't do this now, I'm not going to do it. And so I was literally leaving the Woolworth Building, and I think I had my box with me, and I got a call when I'm in the lobby, and it was from a coach whose program I was considering. And he's like, are you in? And I'm like, I mean, if this isn't a sign from the universe, like, I don't know what is. And so, you know, I moved forward with a, you know, business coaching program to help me build my practice, one of many I've done over the years, and kind of kick things off. And so for the past 3+ years, I've been coaching full time. And Purpose Up is really all about helping people tap into what they really want to be doing, and then giving them the strategies and skills to get there. Because if we're not happy doing what we're doing most of the time, then our life is kind of an energy drain that could be a lot more fun than it could be.
Yeah, I hear that. Well, that's something that I've really instilled in my offspring, that you know, you really got to find something that makes you happy. And I feel really blessed. I got into television production back in, oh gosh, well, just take a step back. living in the alcoholic family, I knew I had to get out of the house. My sister's 2 years older. She was already out. I'm like, whatever I do, I got to go to college because I can't stay here, you know? So I loved horses and I loved carpentry. And I was already doing carpentry with a friend's father, and you don't really go to college for that, you know? So I went for animal husbandry, upstate New York. You know, my friends are still making fun of me. You know, why didn't you marry a sheep, you know? But it was a great experience. I mean, I love animals. So, you know, I remember having barn duty, sitting in the barn waiting for, you know, the mare to give birth, you know, didn't happen on my watch, and milking cows and shearing sheep. I got an F in one of the classes. I refused to brand a sheep. I'm like, I'm not doing that. It hurts, you know, castrating sheep. I'm like, nope, not going to happen. So, but anyway, it was a wonderful experience. And I used to see people running around with cameras at the college that my girlfriend was going to. So anyway, I wound up going for that and got into television production and photography. And interesting, you were talking about like your wonderful personal journey, 8 months. That must have been phenomenal. I was 22 and I backpacked across Europe, which was one of the best things I ever did. And that's why I tell my kids, you know, in addition to find something you love to do, because you're going to be doing it all day long, you know, travel, you know. So they've done a fair amount of traveling. My youngest graduated last year. He got to study in Barcelona a bit, and it just changes your perspective. You know, the stories they shared, also doing, you know, Birthright, which I didn't know about. That's, you know what that is, right? If you're Jewish, you get to, it's a free trip. I'm like, dudes, take a free trip. It's like, they're going to send you to Israel. I haven't even gotten my butt there, which is one of my regrets, because on that journey, that month long journey, I was just starting my own video business and I had a new client. It was like, oh, I got all this work for you. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to be gone for like a month or two. He's like, if it's more than a month. So anyway, I wound up like, you know, curling around the Mediterranean and heading back to New York, which I kind of regret because it never really panned out business wise to be the big, wonderful thing.
I think they've got Birthright trips for adults.
I have to look into that because, you know, I mean,
I think they do. And I've been on one and it is an amazing free trip.
Yeah. Hey, free trips, man. I mean, why not, right? I mean, so, but yeah, I think those journeys that we take, that we choose to gift ourselves, those things, really, they take us in these directions that we might be regretting the rest of our lives. Like, oh wow, I should have done that, but didn't. So I love that you had the wherewithal and the, you know, the gumption to just get up there and go for 8 months, which is beautiful. And anybody that does that, you know, follow your dream, follow your bliss, as the saying goes, because you never know where that's going to lead to, rather than staying on that, like, well, got to have the money, got to have the job. And if that's the main impetus behind doing what you're doing, are you fulfilling your purpose? I don't necessarily think so. So I wanted to ask you a question about purpose, because I was talking to another one of our friends, Tia. We recently did an interview, and she's very much about purpose also. And in my coaching practice, that was a big thing. And I did a webinar on, like, you know, what's your passion, your purpose, and your whatever the other P was. And a lot of guys that I work with get really hung up on, I don't know what my sacred purpose is. I don't know what my you know, my whatever you want to call it, my divine purpose, my reason for being here. And I thought about that. And I, you know, I feel really blessed that yes, I've had a great career and I'm still working in television production. I feel like that has been part of my purpose, to put out like meaningful media. But really more my purpose is really the men's work that I do, showing up and just being present, as we talked about, and supporting guys through their journey, you know, through my experiences and connecting people.
We'll be right back after this.
Do you sometimes feel down, lost, or lonely? Are your finances feeling sluggish? Can your relationships use a healthy tune-up? Don't fear, bro. Help is here. Experience the benefits of connecting with other men who are going through similar challenges. Be supported in our safe, sacred, and inspiring monthly telecircle with the Brotherhood of the Illuminated Warriors. Connect with Waska for one-on-one mentoring with the first session completely free. What have you got to lose? Check out illuminatedwarrior.com. Or send an email to waska@illuminatedwarrior.com. You're invited to step up your game and join us. You'll be glad you did.
anyway, a lot of guys were talking about, I don't know what my purpose is. And this could be from young guys, which is understandable, to like guys in the 50s and 60s. So I thought about that and I was like, wow, you know, why put that kind of pressure on ourselves to, you know, focus on my divine purpose? What's my sacred purpose? What's my purpose? What's my purpose? And I just thought about it like, what's the most meaningful thing really that I could offer for myself as well as anybody else is to just wake up in the morning and choose to be happy, choose to be grateful. I mean, I start and end my day with prayers of gratitude. So wake up, be grateful, choose to be happy, and be in service to others whenever you can, no matter what you perceive that you have or don't have. You know, we can get into the whole abundance and lack mentality thing. Whatever it is, you always have, you have your breath, you have your heart to give, you know, and so much comes with that, to being in service to others. So that's just something I start offering the guys. You know, you don't have to know what your sacred purpose is right now. You know, just wake up in the morning, choose to be happy, you know, be grateful for what you do have, connect with people, and whenever you could be in service to others, I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful thing. So what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, I resonate with what you're saying a lot. When I talk with people about it, there's lots of different angles on purpose and kind of like vision. If you're in a place where you're like, oh, what's my vision or what's my purpose? And you're in that constricted place, just take a walk. Just stop, because I was struggling with that purpose question, and I tend to make things hard and I try to analyze them, but that's not going to get you there. So what I say is like, you're not going to find your purpose under a rock. Like, you're not searching for it. A helpful lens to ask yourself, and this kind of jives with what you're saying, is like, how can I live more purposefully today? Right? How can I align more with what energizes me? And I think, you know, you hit on a great point around service. And I think there is an innate part of our humanity that when we're in service to others, we raise our vibration. And so I think that's important. And I like what Tony Robbins says about this. He's like, there's a science to success. You can model people and you can follow them. But a lot of people end up being successful, but it's hollow and they're not necessarily happy. But there's an art to fulfillment. And part of that art is figuring out how you like to serve others, because ultimately that's going to open up a lot for you. And then piggybacking off what we were saying earlier, when you ask yourself, how can I be more purposeful today? When you practice mindfulness and you get more in touch with yourself, you're able to turn up the volume on your intuition. And you get to kind of follow what energizes you and what doesn't. And you just get to take those steps, take some action, and don't worry about it being the thing, but just saying like, okay, I'm going to follow this path. And if I don't like where it's going to go, I can change paths and go towards what energizes me and away from what sucks my energy. And in taking those steps, getting more in touch with your intuition, you'll get more and more clear. It's about like focusing that lens, picking that point on the horizon, and then shifting to hone in on that. And that's part of the advice I'd give people.
Yeah, that's very good advice. Yeah. I mean, we hear the words like authenticity a lot. So, you know, call it being genuine, being authentic, being real. I have found that it really is so vital, because I lived a lot of my younger years like trying to be cool, you know, when I wasn't, trying to be this, trying to be that, you know, and it's, you know, it's not authentic. And now, you know, I say I don't give a poop anymore what people think, you know, and to a degree, of course I do, man, I'm still human and all, but I speak my truth. I open up my throat chakra. I do it with compassion, but I'm not gonna hide away like I did when I was a little boy. Excuse me. You know, if I have something to say that I feel is of value, or maybe I can make somebody laugh, or again, like be in service, however I can be, rather than, you know, stay down here and, you know, be self-conscious and like, oh, who am I to say this or do this? Well, you know, as the saying goes, who am I not to? You know, you never know who you're going to touch with your heart. Just open your heart. You know, I don't care about looking foolish anymore, because I just laugh at myself. Like I was actually on my balcony working on something yesterday, just sitting on my meditation cushion, but I was leaning back against the chair, which I usually don't do, and the chair slipped and I fell backwards over, and I just started cracking up laughing, hoping somebody saw me and got a kick out of it, because you know, my feeling is now, like, if I can't laugh at myself, then I'm still way back where I was when I was thinking about what people think about me, you know. And I think we have to really take that moment and not take life so seriously, and be able to laugh at ourselves and be light about things. There's a lot of heavy stuff going on in the world these days, you know, especially yeah. now with the pandemic, and the way things are not going back to, or the way they're going used to be. So let's shift into that a little bit. How has your experience been around that, with even like with personal relationships, just even a lot of the issues that are coming up, or not being able to socialize as maybe you once did?
Well, I have to say, first, I'm an introvert, and prior to the pandemic, I worked from home. So I think it probably affected a lot people a lot more than it may have affected me, because it's like I already am used to this Zoom world. What the gift was for me was, you know, we had our second child, Mila, January of 2020. So we were kind of in a cocoon phase for the beginning of the pandemic anyway. What was heartbreaking for me was the, you know, Noah was 2 at the time, explaining to him that the park was closed. It's like, the park's closed. Like, come on, that's ridiculous. And him not being able to socialize with other folks. And another benefit was being able to reconnect with people that I probably wouldn't have otherwise via Zoom, whether it be for a guy's poker game or, you know, reuniting with some high school friends on Zoom. So, you know, with all that said, missed date nights out and all of that. In South Florida, for better or for worse, the regulations are pretty lax. So it feels like things are starting to get back to normal. And I think what I'm looking forward to most is being able to get out in groups of people to network, or to, you know, listen to people speak, because that is kind of what I've missed the most, the personal connection there. Since I've been vaccinated, I've been a little bit more bold about venturing out and kind of filling myself up like that. How about yourself?
Similar to you, I've always spent a lot of time, I'll say, by myself. There's a big difference between being alone and being lonely. And I've really always cherished my alone time. You know, I'll sit and play my guitar, I'll read a book, I'll meditate, I'll watch a movie, whatever. And then of course I have my time with friends or family or whatever else, but I really value that internal time, because there's just so much chatter and noise that goes on, like, on a regular daily basis. And it reminds me, I don't know if you've ever done a Vipassana retreat.
Yeah.
We were talking about a ayahuasca trip, which is an interesting and good experience as well. I've done that a number of times also, and I actually have not done that in quite a long time since I did the Vipassana retreat or trip. It's not an easy thing to do, but long
and short, being silent, right?
That's the easiest part. So that would be easy for you also. A lot of the people there were like freaked out about that. I'm like, what's the big deal? That's the easy part, not talking. Right. So the minimum is 10 days. Sometimes it'll go 30 days. So I did the minimum, which was 10 days. And I could see why it's got to be at least that, because it takes a little while to decompress and just get out of your own head. And I've been meditating since the 90s, but not for an entire day. You know, we would do, you know, we had day long programs, but maybe we'd go like an hour or two and then take a lunch break, or then. So this was very, very challenging. So the first couple of days, sitting for hours on end, my back was screaming. I was like super uncomfortable. I'm trying different cushions. And, you know, again, the not speaking was easy. And then it was a fourth day, something happened, it clicked, and then I could just sit all day. But then I went up here into my brain, into my cranium, and I was like, oh, I wish that back pain would come back, you know, because now I got to deal with me and my stuff and all the things that were coming up. And, you know, it took some processing and presence to go through that. I remember they did a check-in like a couple times, and guy asked me, one of the guys, he's like, you know, how you doing? I said, wow, I'm in bliss. And his response to me was, you'll get over it, you know? And at first I was like, hey man, this is what I want. He's like, no, that's not what you want. Because like the basis of Vipassana, which is what the Buddha came to, that was his awakening, is the clinging and the craving. You know, we don't want to cling to anything. We don't want to crave anything. We don't want to avert anything, because that's where the suffering is. You know, we want to be liberated from all those things. So what he was saying was actually, he wasn't trying to be funny. He's like, okay, you're blissful now. That's great. Get over it, because that too shall pass. You know, the Sanskrit word, the Hindu word is anicca, which means impermanence, because everything's impermanent. So when we live in the reality that everything is impermanent, you know, you just take the moment as it is, as we were saying, and being in presence and be grateful for right now, man. I'm grateful to be having a conversation with you, bro. I mean, really. I don't know what's going to happen when we hang up from this call. I mean, so this is a beautiful moment, right?
100%, 100%. It piggybacks off what you were saying earlier. And I tell my clients this sometimes, because I need to hear this, is to not take things so seriously. And I'm like, hey, we're going to die. People are not going to remember us in a couple of generations. So stop taking things so seriously. And if your life was a game, or if it was a screenplay, like, what do you want to have happen? Because you can have some fun with this rather than struggling or grinding or all that overwhelm. I mean, it's easier said than done, but when we zoom out a little bit and we don't take it as seriously, a lot more opens up for us with possibility to really go for stretching ourselves rather than playing it safe. And, you know, I think that's like one of the benefits of meditation is being able to step back from that ticker tape of thought, realize our ego brain, all it's trying to do is solve problems and keep us safe. And once we realize that, we realize we've got some outdated programming, we can step around that and be like, okay, well, I know I can work around this if I'm aware of it. So what is it that I really want to create that my soul, my spirit wants to create here? And then how can I have fun with that? So this is another interesting question to ask, and another kind of Tony Robbins shout out. He says, you know, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of questions that you ask yourself. And so when we think about vision or purpose, you can just take a step back, and it doesn't have to be this hard thing. Just ask yourself, wouldn't it be cool if, right? Wouldn't it be cool if this happened next year for me, or if I created this, or ABC, and have some fun with that possibility. And I think it's a great question to ask.
Yeah, I love that. And then talking about after you manifested that, after it happened, because I think there's so many times that we're afraid to do that. Like, what if, you know, what could this look like for me? But if we don't put it out there, how could it ever possibly manifest? So I love that, just the thought and the practice of doing that, and you know, setting intentions and then bringing them to light. Because I think the generation before, at least, I see how my parents were raised. I mean, it was kind of like a very linear way to be. You know, I won't even say you fell in love. You got married, you had kids. You know, he did the brought home the bacon, she cooked the bacon. You know, the kids go to school. You know, whatever it was. Now, I mean, especially, I mean, I look at the pandemic as really a gift to really embrace and bust out of whatever those restrictions were that were keeping any of us down, because there's so many opportunities now. There really are. I mean, I get that there are definitely trials and tribulations going on also, and challenges, but it's a great opportunity for us to really bust out of those chrysalis and spread those wings and really manifest whatever it is, whatever our purpose is, if it's simply just being joyful, or it's creating something that, you know, affects a million people, whatever it is. So, but yeah. This has been awesome, brother. I want to give you the opportunity to close with any words of wisdom or anything you want to share that might be coming to mind or left unsaid.
Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, to land the plane with the pandemic, And what I've noticed with the clients that I've seen is, A, they've got more time with family. And I think when you talk about purpose, purpose takes many forms and many different missions. And I think, you know, being aligned and loving your family, it doesn't have to always be this like huge thing that you have to get done. But people are realizing more that as they get to spend time with their families that, wow, this is really valuable and I don't need to spend all my life commuting. And also being away from the office has given people more time without, you know, big brother over their shoulder, at least in person, maybe digitally, to explore more. So it's been great for business for me because people have more time and they've got more space for introspection. And in that way, it's been a gift as well. So, you know, I encourage anyone who's struggling with that dissatisfaction or feeling like there's a big gap between where they are and where they want to be, or they don't feel like they're on the right path, to reach out and get support there. Because one thing that I've realized that's a huge takeaway is that help, getting help from whether it's a purpose coach, an energy coach, a men's mentor, like all of that is so helpful, and you don't have to do it alone. And it makes the journey so much more fun and connected. And so that's kind of where it makes sense to land the plane from where we started.
Yeah, amen to that. I totally concur with you on that, man. The lone wolf ultimately dies. So yes, reach out, man. Yeah, if you're hearing our voices, reach out. And I'm pumped because my only purpose was to connect with my brother, who I have not connected with much before, have some fun, offer some good information, and spread the love. So I feel like I fulfilled my purpose just for today. And maybe sometimes that's all it is, right? Our purpose is just for the moment, just for the day.
Yeah, and I love you taking some time to celebrate that. That triggers a little dopamine that you're on the right journey, and it gives you energy to keep going.
Right on. So offer the listeners information how they could connect with you, because Ben is as you hear is an awesome dude, awesome father, awesome human being, awesome coach. So how can people connect with you if they so choose?
Yeah, so my website is easypurposeup.com. So it's purpose, the word up.com. You can check me out there, learn more about me, book a call if you want to chat and connect, see if my offer is right for you. And then if you're an Instagram type of person, Coach Ben Stein, S-T-E-I-N, you can find me there. But all my social links are on my website. So don't be bashful about reaching out.
All right. Well, this was awesome, brother. It was great connecting with you.
All right. Thank you so much for having me and holding the space. I appreciate you, Oscar.
All right. Appreciate you too, Ben. All right. Well, peeps, tune back in and let's keep illuminating the airwaves. Until next time.
Visit illuminatedwarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.